there is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Film Reelcast. This week, we are going back to 1975. We're also kind of going back to 2014. And the reason why I say that is because we are reviewing Jaws, but we're re-reviewing it. We did it originally in 2014. And we thought every now and then, because we've got Kelly, who I'll introduce in a second, who is on a film podcast, who has just discovered the invention of television and entertainment in general, and has just discovered films. So we thought, why don't we go back and do classic films, old films which were groundbreaking, and just see if she's seen them, which she hasn't, and we'll review them, just to educate her. So on that note, we have got a very sniffly Kelly. How are you?
Wow, what an intro. Thank you very much. I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. Thanks for coming on. I know you're not very well, so I do appreciate it. I mean, the main reason why we are doing this is because we want... And I don't know if I even said the name, we're doing Jaws. So, but that's why I want to educate you in this amazing cult film. So, and also on the pod, I'm really, really pleased to say it back again for the second time after his long break. It's Steve. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Jaws, 1975. I know it's a stupid question because you're an educated man. Have you seen this film? Is it a stable diet of your viewing from kind of month to month or yearly?
It's I'd say not so often because it scares me.
Okay, I get that. That's what I really want to talk about. It's one of the massive things. If anyone hasn't listened to our podcast we did in 2014, it's fucking full of facts. This film, I mean, it's got the Jaws log. It's got a book, even though the original book was by Peter Benchley. The actual making of this, there was so much myth and legend surrounding what actually happened, it spawned another book. So we have got loads of facts on the original one, but obviously we'll be going through some of the unreal things that you really can't believe. And bearing in mind, this is 1975. This spawned the first summer blockbuster, didn't it, Steve?
The amount of money it made is ridiculous for... I mean, it's nearly 50 years old now. So 50 years ago, what was it, like 9 mil?
It was 7 million and it grossed 477. But that's obviously expanded hugely since then. I mean, it's enormous. It's a monster itself, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's obviously spawned off X, Y, and Z amount of sequels and whatnot. But this is like one of the original blockbusters. This made cinema so big.
Yeah, it really, really did. And it was kind of... It's what put Steven Spielberg on the map. Obviously, this wasn't his first debut at directing, and he wasn't the first choice. But he did it. He brought his own vision to it halfway through. That there's a rumor that he wanted to leave and wanted to get out and go on to another film, but he stuck with it, and it was groundbreaking. There's so many things that they still use in film school today. For example, when Roy Scheider's on the beach, and the camera pulls away, but zooms in on him at the same time. And it just looks fantastic. And it's so iconic, those beach scenes. And it was obviously filmed in widescreen, very widescreen. But back in those days, apart from the cinemas, everyone had kind of square TVs. So nowadays, you can really appreciate it, especially when it's digitally remastered. And then when it came out, they had the Laserdisc as well, which had the big documentary. So people were just queuing up to buy it. Just for the documentary. It's just groundbreaking. And the book, as I say, by Peter Benchley, who actually does appear in this film as a reporter as well. I read the book a while back, And I take it, have you guys read the book at all?
I'm not that educated.
I won't even bother asking Kelly because it hasn't got pictures in it.
Yeah,
Is
you
it?
know the answer to that one.
Yeah, it's a proper book. It hasn't got a pop-up or anything. The
No.
book's completely, in a way, it's completely different. For example, Hooper ends up having an affair and starts shagging Brody's wife. And the beach is going to be kept open because the mafia are paying Vaughn, the mayor, to keep the beaches open. And in the end, the shark isn't blown up. It's kind of harpooned numerous times by Quint, and that's the way it dies. And it was, and kind of the that obviously was very interesting, and it sold a load. And before this book kind of became huge, then the rights to the book were bought by a very, very clever person who knew this was going to be a massive blockbuster. And at the end of it, when Spielberg said, "Right, I want to blow the shark up, and this is what we're going to do, and there won't be any mafia, there won't be any Hooper having sex." With Ellen Brody, that he got the ump so much that he actually stormed off and kicked off so much that he stormed off and he was never allowed back on set again because of the fucking hissy fit he had because he didn't go in his direction. So there's just so much kind of that kicked off, which led to this film being just as iconic as it was. And you said, Steve, this scares you. And it'll be interesting to hear if it's the same reason why it scared me, because it's generational. But why did this scare you, mate?
I think from a young age, the scene I remember most is the Lilo washing up onto the beach. I
Yes,
just,
Mrs. Kitchener's kid gets
yeah,
eaten, yeah.
fucking traumatized me as a child.
Oh,
And
really?
yeah, I think this is where my phobia of open water probably started. So this is like proper traumatizing. It's just, I'm not about that life. I don't need to go into the sea for any reason. I'll keep my feet firmly on the ground. I don't need it.
It's really, really weird. Because as I say, I was born in 74 and I saw this on video and when I was very, very young, and it terrified me for going in the sea. Like now, and I talk about this on the pod we did in 2014. As an adult now, when I go into the sea and if I'm out of my depth or pretty deep, I shit myself and I have that panic moment that possibly I'm going to get eaten by a shark or what the hell is below me. And it's this film that has just installed this fear that it's mental and I can't get rid of it regardless. And it's really scary. And I wonder, because this is the first time you've ever seen this film, Kelly, that did it scare you at all? Did it install that fear, do you think, if you go in the sea?
No, I absolutely love the sea and open water and stuff like that. I have very little fear of it, and this didn't change that. I don't, but I think probably because I'm older watching it, and the film is obviously much, much older, so less realistic. So, no, it didn't scare me in any way, shape, or form.
I think that's quite sad to be, to a certain extent. I feel like you've missed out on something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that because I haven't had, like, in your mind, the full effect of the film. I can appreciate it. I can see how it has put people off. And, like, bless him, Steve can't go in open water. I think that's quite cute. And I can see how it would do that to people. I do understand that. But it's just, I guess, I don't know. I know sharks don't do what they said they showed in this. So maybe it's because I understand that a bit more about it. I don't know, but no, it didn't scare me at all in the way that it clearly has you guys.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that you make, that nowadays we're so educated on what's actually happened. We've got the internet, we have Sky and National Geographic, and we have Shark Week, and we're so well informed as to what sharks do and the areas they swim in. You get obviously get the odd attack, but I think to a certain degree that will ruin the experience now. Whereas before, you relied on books and it was like urban myth. It was chatting to someone who didn't really know, who was ill-informed, and they told you information. And then it kind of snowballed. Whereas now, I think possibly we do know too much. Would you agree with that, Steve?
What, knowing too much about the sea?
Well, we weren't educated enough. I mean, they were going by books in this film, for example, sharks ramming boats. And that's what you saw it on the TV in the 70s, and you believed that that's possible, that could happen. Whereas now, we know for a fact that a shark won't ram a massive boat and do what they did.
70% of the earth is covered by water, and you think we know. We don't know. Sharks are scary. The sea is scary. This film is fucked up.
So is it just sharks, just so I understand? Is it just sharks you're afraid of in the
No,
sea or just the sea
actually.
in general?
So really far out, yeah. I mean, I can go into the sea. It's not like I'm going to throw a hissy fit. But more importantly, crabs. No, thank you.
You talking about the disease or the actual crustacean?
I've never had the pleasure of dealing with the disease. So the actual
Interesting.
crustacean is a no for me. Fuck those bastards. And they do both, don't they? So they're even more evil, because just when you think you're safe, they come out sideways at you.
Yeah, I think maybe you've watched like SpongeBob a lot, and that you've kind of taken that as a possible documentary.
Yeah, basically everything I watch on TV I take as gospel is fact.
Love
That's what kind of
it.
worries me. But we'll go through the cast on this film. Obviously, you've got Roy Schneider as Brody, Robert Shaw as Quint, Richard Dreyfuss as Hooper, Lorraine Gray as Ellen Brody, the brilliant Murray Hamilton as Mayor Vaughan. And Peter Benchley is the interviewer on the beach. You see him. And you've got Chris Reblo as Michael Brody. And I want to mention her because she does do something quite amazing. And it's Mrs. Kitchener, whose her name is Lee Ferrillo. And she actually smacked Roy Schneider in the face 14 times to do that take. And he said it's one of the most painful things he's ever been through, because she really, really does wallop him. Just want to go through some of the facts on this film, because as I say, we could go on all day just talking about facts alone. But according to director Steven Spielberg, the prop arm, because we're going to go through this scene in a very second, looked too fake in the scene where Chris's remains are discovered on the beach. So instead, a crew member just buried her arm exposed in the sand to make it look more realistic. Just little touches like that are genius, aren't they? I love little things like that.
What, you love women buried in the sand?
Arms found on the beach, I was referring to, but I've never been lucky enough to find one myself. And according to writer Carl Gibley, Roy Schneider ad-libbed his line and made it up, "You're gonna need a bigger boat," which is an iconic line. I love that line. Every time I watch this film, I say it before he does, or I say it along with him. It's brilliant. And over 67 million people in the US went to see this film when it was initially released in 1975, making it, as I said earlier, the first summer blockbuster. And this was very, very funny. And I've watched some interviews on YouTube. Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss, they could not stand each other, and they argued all the time, just belittling each other. And there was huge tension. And when they were on the Orca, apparently Robert Shaw kept saying to Richard Dreyfuss, daring him to climb up to the top of the mast and jump off. And he kept saying that, "You're not a man. A real man would do it. A real man would do it for 5,000." And it got up to 17,000. And Steven Spielberg had to step in and said, "He's not jumping 70 foot off this mast into the ocean just to prove he's a real man." And apparently Robert Shaw was wankered virtually all the way through filming this. I mean, that's just fucking brilliant, isn't it, itself?
Well, it caused quite a few problems, him being drunk, didn't it? Didn't he get given like an ultimatum? Basically, if he was going to carry on drinking, he was going to get booted off.
Yeah, and he had to fly back for tax reasons every few weeks back to Canada. So he didn't pay tax, which was really awkward, which is bizarre. You just can't imagine that now. And the scene where the head pops out of the boat, I think it's Ben Gardner's boat, was originally meant to be the only scare in the film. But because the audience reacted so well to it, he put another scare in of when Jaws jumps out when they're chucking Chump in the boat, which was meant to be like his next jump scare. And there wasn't such a big reaction. And he learned from that through future films of only have one big jump scare, because once you have one, as an audience, you're more guarded as to what could happen in a build up to a possible jump scene. So he said through doing this, through getting greedy, that he learned such a big lesson, which again, I love these little things. And again, when Quint talks about the US Indianapolis, that it was written down by Howard Sackler and John Mills, who was the writers on this, but it was rewritten by Robert Shaw, who was a screenwriter himself at the time, and then presented it, and I agreed that it was better. And that, we'll talk about it again when it happens, but it's just amazing how he delivers those lines. And it's quite, you just believe that he was there, don't you, Kel?
Yeah, the film in general, I thought for its time and everything was really good. So yeah, they presented it well and put it together well, and it does work. You do get a good few scares and a good few moments where you do believe that it's actually happening. It's real.
Yeah, it's great. And the start of this film, it goes off with a bang. And you obviously have the young couple on the beach, and she goes into the sea. And this was a 15. No, this was a PG, sorry. And you, how this remained a PG, because you've got kind of like an older PG-13 than a PG. And but it's got boobs in, hasn't it? And it still remained. It's got kind of limbs in it as well. So it's incredible that this remained a PG, I think. But she goes out, and when she gets eaten, and as it's horrific, I think her attack is so believable. And as an introduction to a film, there's not many better than this, is there?
I have issue with this scene, the opening scene,
Go for it.
and so it really detracts from what's happening. It's all to do with the filter, the camera filter, because it's quite clearly filmed during the day, and a filter's been put on it to
Right.
make it look like it's nighttime. I don't know why, it really irritates me. It's almost like we're watching a film with sunglasses on, so I just can't focus on what's happening. Yeah, the attack is quite brutal. It's almost like, the dead of night kind of thing, which makes it even more scary, because you definitely don't go swimming at night. That's just suicide. But yeah, I feel like the actual shark attack where the little lad dies, I think that's would have been like maybe even a better opening in a way.
Okay, I think I like this one, to be honest, because it's the innocence of what people do, and this is like an everyman kind of situation where it can happen to you. You're having fun, and you're just gonna go out. I wouldn't go out swimming at night. I'm too much of a pussy to be able to do that, to be honest. I'd be too scared.
Why
This film
not?
scarred me.
What difference does it make, day or night?
Because I was
Explain.
young when I watched Jaws, and it freaked me the hell out. That's the reason why. It's brilliant. I went to the cinema when they re-showed this a couple of years back as the anniversary, and took my kids because I wanted them to experience what I went through. And when the head went out of the boat, Samuel jumped about 6 foot in the air and shit himself. And it was brilliant because I did that. I kind of passed it down, and it's just great. And that's why I kind of think you missed out a treat. You didn't go through this. And that's only my honest opinion. But when she does get attacked, a lot of the screaming is actually real, that she is in that much pain, because the way they did it was that because she was being jolted around by the shark, that they tied rope either side and had two people on a boat either side pulling her left and right. And she actually broke a few ribs whilst they were doing that. So the screams she's actually screaming out when she's being attacked are real ones, because two blokes either side are yanking her left and right,
That's
which
brutal.
is, but it's kind of, I think it works better. I mean, there's nothing obviously green screened in this. It's all on a boat. When they're out in the orca, you're there with them, man versus shark. And you're just so live and real, because there's no special effects. With her death, I think, is so impactive, because you know she's being slung around by geezers with ropes on her, and it is just brutal, and it's great. I love it. I think, as an audience member watching this, even now, knowing what's going to happen, it's kind of, the image stays with me. I really, really like it. But I mean, do you think it's savage, Kel?
What, the attack itself?
Yeah, the opening scene.
No, I wouldn't say I thought it was brutal. You kind of, I guess because I know, or I knew what was coming, I expected it. Like you say, I've lost probably some of the shock factor because I've not seen Jaws, but I know what it's all about. So, if they're at night going in the water drunk, it's no big surprise that someone's going to get eaten alive by a shark. So no, I didn't think it was that gruesome or that brutal. No, I think it's more brutal knowing that she was actually in pain and being pulled apart,
Yeah.
like properly. So
But you did
no, I
message
didn't
me
think.
saying, oh yeah, tonight I need to watch that. What is it called again? I don't know. It's that shark attack film, isn't it? It's like,
Yeah.
wow, it's Jaws. It's fucking massive.
I forgot. I had like I was gonna say a blonde moment. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
But you are blonde.
Yeah, so it's allowed.
You can get away with it. I can take the piss out of balds. So
Okay, cool
one.
then.
It's a club, yeah. I thought, yeah, not real that much investment in this film as much as I am. So it's just a shark attack film. Never mind. The relationship, let's talk about that. We introduced to Roy Snyder, Chief Brody, comes from New York. We don't really get his background story. I think it's kind of one of those things where we learn that no one gets murdered in Amity, and it's just like a retirement, isn't it?
Yeah, he looks like he's at the end of his career. I mean, maybe he's just an older looking person, but he's clearly gone there for an easier lifestyle.
Yeah, 100%. And he's got to be gutted. He goes to this island. For anyone, we know he doesn't like the water, which is quite ironic, where nothing happens. And all of a sudden, a 25-foot shark starts eating people and he's left to deal with it. And you would just think someone hates me up there, wouldn't
I think the correct term is ship magnet.
you?
But maybe this is a bit too much for a ship. A ship magnet is like, yeah, you just have a bad day. This is probably a bit beyond ship magnet.
Yeah, it is. This is way beyond it. But I love Amity in itself. When you see Snyder, they find it on the beach and he's instantly banging in the office, shark attack, writing his report out. And you follow him and walking around Amity where he gets the signs to close the beach. And it's just a real tiny little village. It's just a picket fence. The problems they've got, the local karate school, the kids are doing ninja kind of punches on the picket fence, breaking it. People are parking in red zones. This is a town where they're just not used to anything happening at all, are they?
It's just a cute little American village where nothing ever happens. So this is like major incident. I mean, I know a shark attack probably is a major incident anywhere, but for them it's even more serious and even bigger because, like you say, the worst they have is people breaking fences.
Yeah, and it's great. And I love the kind of mafia feel you get when Brody obviously asks Lance, the other police officer, who's a bit of an idiot and a bit of a sheep and just does what he's told. He's clearly grown up on the island and knows the rules, that you get the mayor and you get the medical examiner telling him about the civic ordinance for legislation of closing the beach.
Martin, you going to shut down the beaches on your own authority?
Well, what other authority do I need?
Now, technically, you need a civic ordinance or a resolution by a board of selectmen.
That's just going by the book. We're really a little anxious that you're rushing into something serious here. It's your first summer, you know.
And they kind of surround him, don't they, when they're on that raft, and just put it to him that the beach, the money comes before lives, and you don't know what you're doing. Because he's always going to be an outsider, and he's never going to have a real say in what happens, regardless of being the police chief, is he, Steve?
No, and there is a comment made by one of the beachgoers a little later on, highlighting, you know, it's quite a community. If you're an islander, you're an islander, and if you're not, you'll always be, you'll never be accepted. They'll always make sure you know that you're almost not welcome, but you'll never understand their way of life in a way because they're so reliant on tourism, I suppose, that they've clearly got their own way of life and they need to keep the cogs turning to make sure the money comes in. So they will do whatever it takes. And the mayor is, he looks like the type that probably will bend, break, and shatter the rules to make sure the town stays afloat.
Yeah, and he even comments that when he says about Barracuda.
You yell Barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
He's open to the possibility that there is a shark, but he just doesn't care because it's all about the summer money coming in and Amity surviving, which I do get to a certain extent. But I mean, it's pretty quick. After about 30 minutes, we get another kill. And it is a dog. Oh, the child dies as well. But sadly, a dog dies. And this is Steven Spielberg's dog that he used. I think it was called Boomer. And that's a dog that brilliant acting by the dog. How it didn't win an award, I really don't know. I don't know if they do dog awards. And sad, Mrs. Kitchen's kid dies. He takes the Lilo out, and it's awful, isn't it? You've got everyone in the sea and people watching. And again, this is when I talk about the iconic scene, the cinematography of pulling back from Roy Schneider's face when he's looking out through the line of the coast. And as they pull back, they zoom in, and it just looks fantastic. It looks so iconic. I get so excited watching this. And it's horrific. The kid dies. There's claret everywhere. The Lilo's getting flipped. And there's just mayhem, isn't there, on the beach?
I mean, it's how it would be, though. If there was a shark, everyone's going to run out. And there was so much unnecessary, I mean, it's probably not blood, but blood. And I think that's where it started for me. Like, just feeling so exposed in the sea. And he's such a, they really paint him out to be this young, innocent lad. And it's clearly a single parent family. So, you know, she's probably got no one else. And maybe I've just taken on her story way too deeply. But it's fucking shit because she's left there trying to find her child. And then his Lilo washes up on the beach. And that's how she comes to realise that he's been chowed down by Brucey.
Yeah. And it, what's, I think is really telling in the way it's done is that, and that everyone is pulling their child or sibling or whoever out of the sea. And sadly, we learn that it's obviously Miss Kitner who's trying to find her son. And she's the only one. And she stood there whilst the sea's red and the waves are lapping up on the beach. And as you said, Steve, the Lilo kind of washes up, just bitten in half. And it's just, it was awful. I mean, a child dying, you don't often get that, especially the visual. I mean, nowadays, I think they possibly would have just left it to your imagination. Do you not think that, Kelly?
Insert the countdown clock right there. Yeah, I think given it was, I think you said it was a PG, I think how graphic it was, and like Steve said, the amount of blood was quite... that's where I can see how it scares people and how it makes people not want to go into the water and stuff like that. Because it was quite graphic. It would now probably, yeah, because of the amount of blood, just be left to your imagination. And you'd just have maybe the Lilo washing up. And that would be it. Because they're too scared now to put people off.
Yeah, and I love the visuals, even now, and I say this film affects me psychologically because of when I watched it, but I always think the underwater camera is so effective. Even at the start of this film, when you've got the music and you just know what's going to happen, you know what it's about. And the score of the music playing is so, so good. It's absolutely brilliant, John Williams' music. But it's just so creepy. Every time the camera pans on someone, you kind of think, are they going to be eaten? Are they going to be eaten? And it's so effective. I mean, Kel, who's were you more bothered about? The kid being eaten or the dog being eaten?
I mean, you don't really need to ask that, do you? The dog. Any day, the dog.
Steve?
Yeah, it's got to be the dog.
Yeah, it has, isn't it? The dog, the kid went in there at his own free will. The dog, the owner, was throwing the stick in for Pippin to go and get. So technically the owner's fault that the dog died. Yeah, I don't really feel any sympathy for the owner. It's just the dog that took it. But the picture of the Lilo washed up on the beach is horrific. And then we go into the scene, which this is so many quotable, so many iconic scenes of when they get all the town folk, all of the council together to land this shark. They want to get someone to capture the shark. Suddenly, they're kind of taking it real, but they've got no choice. At the moment, all of the pressure is on Chief Brody to get this done. And to a certain extent, that I think that Mayor Vaughan is trying to be the big man, trying to be the saviour. He's there saying a £3,000 bounty is going to be taken out. And this is where we're introduced to Robert Shaw, who plays Quint, the famous scene of scratching his nails down the board.
This bird for you, but it ain't gonna be easy. Bad fish. Not like going down the pond chasing bluegills or tommy cats. This shark, swallow you whole. Shaking, tenderizing, down you go.
And for the first time you've seen this character, Kelly, what was your thoughts on him, his introduction?
I didn't really think much. I didn't understand why he needed to be quite so irritating by running his hands across the board. That I didn't like. I hate that noise. That gives me the creeps more than the shark attack. I hate it. So I think that was a little bit unnecessary, but he was always coming, going to come across as a little bit arrogant and a little bit I know it all. So yeah, he irritated me more than anything.
What about yourself, Steve?
I think looking back on this now, you probably realise that it set a precedent for modern day films. It's like the loner and loser person that always sits at the back and the camera pans to them and they're obviously the person who's going to save the day in a way, foreshadowing. So I suppose at the time, if I'd watched it and it's like the first film I'd ever seen, I would have been like, what a fucking weirdo. But now you look back and you think it actually is a really iconic scene.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love this, especially because we're all coming from different generations, which I think makes it even more interesting. I've known, obviously, Robert Shaw as an actor, lots of different films, and he's a really, really good actor, really good playwright. And I think this character is fantastic. I really, really do. I couldn't imagine anyone else being cast. He is the outsider. He is the loner. And he's like he's a hunter, he's a fisherman. And he knows what he's doing. And I don't think he can stand the bureaucracy of the town, of the way people think you can just go out with a fishing rod and just catch this shark. And I think, from my own beliefs, that's why he is the way he is, that he hates the white collar worker. And that's proven of when he meets Hooper and he talks about his soft city hands, that he's not used to hard work. And I think, I could be wrong, I don't know if you agree, that this is why he comes across the way he does.
Yeah, potentially. He just seems to be someone, he's set in his ways. He is a miserable, lonely old man and just doesn't like anyone who is different to him. So his way isn't always the best way, but he refuses to listen. So he was just a character that irritated me.
It's interesting, irritated you, because I really liked him. I think you needed this. And to a certain extent, they do listen to him. They do close the beach, but they agree to close the beach for a day, don't they? They're not going to lose their summer. And I also like the fact when the next scene, when Roy Schneider's trying to reference, and this obviously dates the film, there are no computers. He's going through books. All the information he can get are through books, through referencing. And I love the scene where his wife comes out, Ellen just says, like, calm down, the kids are fine. And I think it's Sean's on the boat. And she's saying, look, just let him be on the boat. It's tied up. What's the worst that could happen? And I don't know whether this is kind of intentionally like comedy, but when she looks at the book and there's a shark ramming its nose through the side of a boat, she has that freak out moment and shouts out to the kid to get out the boat. I love that. I just think, to a certain extent, that's just such poor education. But this is the only reference they had in those days, wasn't it, Steve?
I wasn't alive in those days, but I imagine books were as good as it got. But yeah, I think it's quite, in a way, a dark film, because you've had a young lady die, you've had a dog die, you've had a child die, all before you've had any adults die. So it's quite dark. So to add a bit of humour, it needs it. It needed something, and that's that little scene was probably put in there just to lift the mood for a bit.
And you do get the humour, though, because you do get the two guys who then try and catch the shark, get the money, and he takes his wife's steak for cooking, for bait for the shark, and he chucks it off the pier, and he ends up getting dragged along. And I was really surprised. I don't know if you were, Kel, but one of them didn't get eaten. I expected one of these clowns to be bait, but it was just done for comedy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I liked this. I liked the previous scene where she sees the book and then shits her pants, basically. And this, I think, is brilliant. But I did think one of them would get eaten. I didn't think they would get away, because they're just two goons, basically. They haven't got a clue. They've totally underestimated the size and strength of this thing. And how they got away with it is incredible. How someone didn't get eaten. It's a shame.
It is a shame. I think it would have been a really, really fun death as well. And we get introduced to Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss, next. Everyone's going out shark hunting. They've got the bounty on this shark, and everyone in Amity wants it. And I'm going to ask both of you, I mean, Steve, what do you think the character of Hooper? Apparently in real life, Richard Dreyfuss was a complete dick on scene and got on everyone's tits. So there could be substance to Robert Shaw thinking he was a dick. But do you like Hooper? Is he a likable character?
Initially, I liked him. I thought he came in with like almost good intentions, but then he just become this smug know-it-all who kind of, I've got money, I have come from the city, I study sharks, I know everything. A spoiler alert, but I would have been fine if he died at the end. I
Yeah.
wouldn't have lost any sleep.
Annoyingly, I have to agree with Steve. I found him, I thought he was good to start with, and he came in, like he says, with good intentions to try and help and just kind of share information. But he quickly becomes quite smug because he clearly is better educated than the people around him, and he has access to better resources than they do. And he kind of flaunts that to them. And he just becomes a little bit of a prick, really. And yeah, I didn't like him as the film goes on. He just becomes an irritating little flea that you just, yeah, wouldn't be sad to see gone.
See, I kind of disagree completely because I think you need a character. I mean, as I say in the book, he ended up shagging Ellen Brody, which would have been interesting if they had this in the film to see what would have happened then, especially when then three are in a boat. But you've got the everyday man, I think, in Roy Schneider as in Chief Brody. And then you've got the back then in 1975, you've got the modern tech, you've got someone, the scientists, who knows his stuff, speaks all these Latin names when you don't need to mention them. He's got the knowledge. And then you've got the other dynamic, old school, working man, Robert Shaw, who plays Quint. And I think it you need those three different dynamics for all of it to work. And I think if they would have had two people the same as Brody, two people the same as Quint, I don't think the dynamics, when they get on the boat, the Orca, that it would have worked so well. So I was really pleased. Yeah, he can be annoying, but I like Richard Dreyfuss. I like him stake out in he's done some very good films. And in this, I think it is excessive. When he does the autopsy, he goes off and speaks Latin, doesn't he? Like of and it's so funny. And apparently on Saturday Night Live, they did a piss take sketch out of this because it's so over the top. This is overacting, isn't it?
Indicates the non-frenzy feeding of a large squalus, possibly Longimanus or Asurus glaucus. Now, the enormous amount of tissue loss prevents any detailed analysis. However, the attacking squalus must be considerably larger than any normal squalus found in these waters. Didn't you get on a boat and check out these waters?
No.
Well, this is not a boat accident. It wasn't any propeller. It wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper.
It was a shark.
Just this scene as an introduction. It's like, if I want an award, this is the scene where I'm going to try and get best supporting actor through this scene alone.
But we almost didn't see the side of his character again. Like, he had the mic, little Britney Spears headset on, and he's like, I need a glass of water. And oh, just this, he's just so pretentious, so fucking pretentious. And he did go all out, really, didn't he? You're right, he went for it.
Yeah, this was absolutely brilliant. And I loved it. And but I do like the fact he challenged a medical examiner to say this was no propeller, this was kind of no coral reef, this was a shark attack. And I think that really upped the stakes in the film. I thought that was great. And then a shark is caught, and I think it's a tiger shark that's caught, and everyone's celebrating. The, I say, naive or ignorant Brody's celebrating, the mayor is. And again, it's Hooper who it has the knowledge, measures the mouth, and you learn that Ben Gardner hasn't caught the right one, that the shark's still out there. And I like the fact that Quint just goes past in his boat, just smiling. And I got the feeling that just by looking alone, I don't know what you thought, Kelly, that he knew that that wasn't the shark.
Yeah, I think he, in some ways, I think he's probably got the same sort of knowledge as Hooper, but he just hasn't gone to school and got the qualifications in the same way. So I think, yeah, he knows just the same. And he's quite happy and smug knowing that this is all absolute bollocks. It's going to come back and bite you in the ass, quite literally. But just give it time. And then they will then call him in. And I think he kind of knows that. He can kind of see that this is all rubbish and it's. Yeah, gonna come out at some point that it's the wrong one.
Yeah, completely. And I do like the scene, and it's really, really done well. And I think for me, it's the best moment by Murray Hamilton, who plays Vaughn, the mayor, that when the bite radius is measured and they learn, or it's believed by Hooper that it's not the actual shark who carried out those attacks and that he wants to cut him open. And the line by Vaughn.
Maybe the only way to confirm it, huh?
Look, fellas, let's be reasonable, huh? This is not the time or the place to perform some kind of a half-assed autopsy on a fish. And I am not going to stand here and see that thing cut open and see that little Kettner boy spill out all over the dock.
I think that's such a funny line, Steve, honestly. It's just really, really harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, but it shows his character perfectly. I suppose the first time you saw it, you were probably maybe a bit more of an adult than I was. No offense. But I wanted that risk. Obviously, we know it's not the shark, but you'd quite like that. Could have been a really suspenseful scene if they had just gutted in there and then.
Oh man, could you imagine that some of the Lilo comes out and like a leg or something like that? That would have just been so hardcore.
Yeah, and credits roll. Film's done. We got the shark.
It'd have gone from a PG up to an 18, I think. It would have been bad. But isn't it weird? Because in the old days, when you watch some of the films, especially like high school films, or if you watch Fame, for example, which was massive in the 80s, it means nothing to you two. But people who were like 17 looked about 30. And Mrs. Kittner, or Kinter, she looks about 70. She looks like it's his grandma, not the mother. And even the dad, I don't even know whether that's meant to be the dad standing behind, because he looks like a granddad. I mean, the ages are so weird and out, aren't they?
Yeah, I assumed that was just some random. I've made this whole kind of backstory in my head that she was married, her husband left for a better life and has a new family, so it's just her and Alex. Alex has unfortunately died and she's spiraled into depression and started taking up drinking and drugs.
Wow, you did put it in. Now she's doing pole dancing at the Amityville strip club to earn money.
Yeah, and no one goes. No one goes. She just dances all night to no one, to the same song repeat.
Is that since she joined that no one goes?
Yeah, she's a tough crowd. She's a DJ with...
It would put me off. She wouldn't crack a smile, you know?
No, she'd be crying the whole time and it's really distracting, isn't it? So,
yeah. She could dance to the John Williams theme, possibly. That would be interesting.
To be fair, John Williams has got some fucking bangers, hasn't he?
Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you could have a whole podcast on John Williams on his own of what he's achieved. Like, it's just amazing.
Kel, if you've never listened to Jewel of the Fates, stick that on. Get ready. Just get ready.
It's so good. Yeah. So good. It's
never
like
even
Zimmer.
Heard of it.
Exactly. So it'll be like the first time, which every time for me feels like the first time listening to Jewel of the Fates. It's just great.
It's just amazing, Kel. The music that he has done, that he's composed, it's incredible. You would not believe how much you know already that you didn't realise that he was responsible for. Honestly, it's really, really incredible, this guy. But the scene where Mrs. Kintner does slap Brody is a really hard-hitting, punching scene.
Chief Brody?
Yes?
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week. And you knew it. You knew there was a shark out there. You knew it was dangerous. But you let people go swimming anyway. You knew all those things.
I watch it, and every time I watch it, I don't know how Brody doesn't turn round and really let rip at Mayor Vaughn. But I suppose in a way they're both responsible. He's responsible. He could have been stronger, couldn't he, Kelly? Possibly.
I don't... No, not really. I don't think so. I think he was kind of up against everything. So what else was he supposed to do?
Well, he wanted the beach shut down and they said no. But if he was true to his kind of morals, the beach would have been shut down.
How? He wasn't the one that had the power.
But he's the chief of police.
Yeah, but he's got, I don't know. Yes, he could have had the final say, I suppose, but I don't think he was ever going to win that fight. He was never going to go against basically everybody who didn't understand the severity of the situation.
So in that case, then, would it have been better on this that if they redid it and she slapped the mayor's face or
Yes.
Brody's face got slapped and he turned round? Why didn't Brody then, Steve, turn round and have a go at the mayor? Why did he just walk
Well,
away?
this is it, isn't it? Because 32 years old, this film was out before I was born, so I've watched it close to 50 times, so once a year since it's been out, not since I've been alive. But yeah, every time I'm screaming at the screen to just be like, don't be such a pussy. Right? You tried and everyone's covered it up just for finances. Like, just turn around and say something, and he does nothing. Just bends over and lets the mayor spank him silly.
Yeah, it does. It's awful. And I'm exactly the same as you. I think, why did you not say anything? Why is Bourne so smug and gets away with it? And at some point, I wish that he got eaten. I really do, because it would have been amazing. They move on to a loving scene where you've got, I think it's Sean and you've got Brody. And this was improvised where they're both doing the faces and the hands at each other on the table. This was something that just happened. And Spielberg, just, let's just play it out. And this scene alone, being watched by Ellen Brody, is so, it feels so natural. It really feels like a father and son just bonding at the dinner. And he says, I want a kiss. Give me a kiss. I deserve a kiss, because he needs it. And it's such a natural loving moment throughout all the chaos in this film, Steve, isn't it? I really love this scene. I don't know if it's because I'm a dad, but I think it just plays out really well.
I think in terms of cinema, this family is probably one of the more authentic. It does feel like a proper family. So I can see where you're coming from. Obviously, I'm not a dad that I know of, but yeah, I really nice little scene.
It is. And Kels, I mean, you don't really have a heart, so to speak. Did you like this scene?
I thought it was really cute. Yeah, and I did think it was authentic and genuine because when you've had a tough day at work and like things like that, where you see other people's families kind of fall apart, you do kind of go home and appreciate what you've got. So I think that shows that side of life as well for him. So it's not just a job, it is affecting him personally. So yeah, I think it was quite sweet.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm surprised you did agree. I thought you might have said, no, I don't like it. I'm not interested. It's absolute bollocks. But you surprised me because no animals were there. So fair play to you. The next scene, which does have an animal in, it does have a mammal in. But when they cut the shark open, and I don't know, obviously, that much about sharks, apart from I wouldn't want to go near one, about the kind of slow digestive system. So they do go back and they believe if this is the shark in question, it will still have the body parts in. And it's really exciting because you think, are they going to cut it open? Are we going to find little kid, his torso, his leg, his head? Are we going to find possibly Pippin just rolling out there? But no, it isn't the shark. And I love the way it's got a number plate and all of these things that sharks eat, just to highlight that these things are eating machines. And it leads to a scene that I kind of think, well, I would not do this. And Kelly, you're saying you would do. When they say, right, let's go to the feeding path, this is Hooper, let's go out at night, sharks are night hunters. And then he goes out, and it dates to film the equipment, Steve, doesn't it, on this? It's meant to be high tech back then, and it was, but all his TV screens, it looks so outdated now, doesn't it?
Yeah, they look super glitchy, and this is where he first highlights his financial situation as well, where he becomes a bit of a douche. But yeah, back in the day, I bet this would have blown people's mind, and I look at it and I'm just like, wow,
Oh yeah,
cool.
underwater cameras, wow, like sonar, radar, and it all comes from the Oceanographic organization, which he's from, who's sponsoring. But in the book, obviously, he's very, very rich as well, and he pays for a lot of it himself. And they go to the feeding path of this shark, and they come across the boat, obviously Gardner's boat, and he goes down there in the dark at night, and it's not, obviously no sweat to him because this is what he does for a living. But wow. I was waiting when I first watched this for something to happen. What did you think, if anything, Kelly, was going to happen on this scene, having never seen the film before?
I genuinely didn't know. I mean, he's definitely got a big set of balls to do what he's doing. Going out in the sea, shallow water for me is fine in the middle of the night or in the dark, but I can't say that I would ever do what he's doing, especially when you're hunting something that's going to eat you. So no, he's definitely got a big pair of balls to do it, but I didn't expect him to see what he saw and find the dead people. That kind of maybe sort of made me jump, but not really, it just shocked me. So I don't really know what I expected. I didn't expect the shark to be there, because he was, otherwise he would have just died very quickly and that would have been end of story very early on.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what I expected, but I didn't expect what happened.
Because they find Ben Gardner's boat, which has been destroyed. And it's very similar, very reminiscent to the picture that Ellen Brody saw with the boat that's been rammed. And this is a real iconic scene. This was the big jump scare that Steven Spielberg wanted, and he got the reaction from the audience when it came out. And it's done really well, considering there's no speaking. Obviously, he's underwater, and Hooper's looking for the hole in the boat. When Ben Gardner's head comes out, when I watched this, I remember when I was younger, Mum said to me, just cover your eyes, because this bit's not very nice. Obviously, I want to know why. Intrigue is there. Tell me to do one thing, I'll do another. And the head came out, and it just scared the shit out of me. Steve, watching this, it's a brilliant scene. It's an iconic scene like many others, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, every now and then, I kind of forget it's about to happen, so it gets me. It just fucks me off that he drops the torch, and the shark tooth really fucks me off. That really, really fucking annoys me.
But he does it, though, at the end of it, when he's got that rod. That he drops it when he gets rammed in the cage. I mean, if you found a shark's tooth, you'd put it in your pocket straight away. And I agree with you completely. When he drops it, oh my God, I know that it's got no eye and it's terrifying. But to me, someone like this would have seen dead bodies. He's examined dead bodies. He picked up the arm of this girl who got attacked at the start. I was disappointed with reaction, as you said. Disappointed the fact that he dropped the tooth, because the next scene when him and Brody are challenging Vaughn about the beach closures of what they've seen and witnessed, when he says, I picked a tooth out the size of a shot glass.
I pulled a tooth the size of a shot glass out of the wrecked hull of a boat out there, and it was the tooth of a great white.
It was Ben Gardner's boat. It was all chewed up. I helped throw it in. You should have seen him.
Where is that tooth? Did you see it, Brody?
No, I didn't see it. He dropped it together.
I had an accident. Way in. And what did you say the name of this shark is?
It's a Carcharodon carcharias. It's a great white.
But you don't have the tooth.
And it's played well, and he's a brilliant actor, Murray Hamilton. The delight in his voice and face when he says, well, where is this tooth then? And, oh, you want to slap him, Kelly, don't you? Because he plays it so well and smug, doesn't he?
He does, and I do like the smugness, because it helps him in his crusade to keep the beach open, because they have no proof and it is all just hearsay. But I do love the level of smugness that he creates in sort of going, well, I told you so. And that's basically all he wanted, because they've gone through all of this. They've done what they wanted. He's let them do what they wanted to do, and they've still got nothing. So he's kind of won.
Mm.
So he's got a good level of smug going on.
He sticks to his guns, though, Steve, doesn't he? Mayor Vaughn, regardless of the experience he's got through the oceanographic, that he sticks to his guns and he does not budge, does he?
No, it takes a lot. I mean, we see his reasoning later on. But he doesn't give a shit. He's just got dollar signs in his eyes.
Can you kind of forgive him for that, to be honest, or not really? We don't know. He's probably grown up on the island and this is all he cares about, and he's very short-sighted. Can you forgive him in any way?
I suppose to some extent, yes, because like you said, growing up on the island, these are two people who are outsiders, so they don't understand to the same level he does. So yeah, maybe he does genuinely have the community's best interest at heart, or maybe he just wants to line his pockets even more.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I do love the speech that Hooper gives him about the shark being a machine and what it does.
Mr. Vaughn, what we are dealing with here is a perfect engine, an eating machine. It's really a miracle of evolution. All this machine does is swim and eat and make little sharks. And that's all. Now, why don't you take a long, close look at this sign? Those proportions are correct.
Love to prove that, wouldn't you? Get your name into the National Geographic.
It's played so well because you do really, really hate the mayor, and that the tomorrow is the 4th of July. He goes, we'll be open for business and we're going to have the best summer ever. And it's done brilliantly because you understand that he does want the money. And the next day, the beach is absolutely rammed, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know, as a kid, I always thought it was busier. I always thought it was a lot busier, but yeah, it's still fairly busy. It doesn't look sunny or warm. It looks windy as fuck.
I'd still get sunburnt in that, though.
Yeah, but you're a sensitive soul, Stuart.
In more ways than one. It really
absolutely
is. But interestingly enough, that the residents, this was Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, where they use Amity Island, probably because of 12 miles out at sea. And the sandy bottom was only 30 feet down, allowing a mechanical shark to function. And residents paid $64 to scream and run across the beach as extras. So everything you see, these people on the beach are just being paid and herded up like sheep just to run across from left to right to scream. So they must have had an amazing time making this, because it part of an iconic film of getting paid for it. And the mayor, and this is really unforgivable, that the mayor is speaking to people also on the council, getting them, forcing them to go out and swim because they're not setting a good example. I mean, that is heartless when he's not going out there himself, isn't it, Kelly? That he's not doing it. He's saying one thing and doing the other like a true politician, isn't he?
Yep. He has got absolutely no balls, this guy. He's completely opposite to Hooper. He just wants the money. He's very selfish and doesn't really give a shit how he gets what he wants. Because you can see when they're going out and they're pushing their kids out on the Lilo, they're absolutely petrified. And he doesn't lead by example. It's just do as I say, not as I do. And you don't need people in power like that. He's just a politician.
Well said. And it's funny because it comes to kind of bite Brody on the arse to a certain extent, that he tells his son, Michael, to go and play in the pond because it's safer. And so he thinks he's doing the right thing. Any parent would do that. But you've got so many people. And watching this film, and even watching it now, knowing that sharks hate vibrations, they're attracted to vibrations, and a drop of blood, they can like smell it for 100 miles away and all that other stuff, that all of these people, they show a splashing, banging, running through the sea. And as again, as an audience, it involves you because you're thinking, well, that person could get attacked, they're splashing, that person could do it because they're kicking or throwing water around. And all the way through this, I found that the stakes are going higher and higher. They flick between the underwater cameras, Steve, don't they? And you think, is that the shark watching, or is it just throughout like a point of view for us? And it's done so well. It's really, really clever and effective.
Yeah, you are trying to call the next victim before it happens. But it keeps you guessing. It keeps the suspense going and it keeps building. And like you said, all the splashing about, and you start to get a bit tense. When I go in the sea, I just stand still.
Yeah, but it's actually having a poo or a wee.
No. No, I have to squat when I'm doing either of those. If I'm just enjoying myself, I will just stand still with my hand by my side and gently smile. I don't want to risk any shark attacks.
You're a very brave man. You're a very brave man. And we do think we get our shark attack when the two young kids are there with the cardboard shark painted the fin on their back. And the look on the woman's face who shouts out shark and just causes utter mayhem in the distance. You've got the boats there with the lifeguards and the coast guards there. And you've got the shark tower and the helicopter. So they're really prepared for it. And somehow you believe the shark has got through all of it. And it's just mayhem. And I love the mayhem of people giving no fucks about each other. It's just all about yourself, Kelly, isn't it? It's trampling anyone just to get out the sea.
Yeah, it is. They don't care about the young or the old or what happens to the people they're treading on or anything. It is literally everybody for themselves. It goes from a village where everyone's a villager, you're all part of the same family, we're all loving, we're all caring, to fuck this, I'm out of here, fuck the rest of you. And yeah, there's no like community spirit whatsoever, that's all gone.
And the funny thing is, before they show this, you've got Mayor Vaughan being interviewed talking about amity is love and the island and we're all a community. And then it's all, let's get the hell out of here. And everyone just runs out of the sea and tramples on everyone. And what I also like is when the Coast Guards get the two kids, that one of them instantly throws his mate under the bus, doesn't he?
Yeah, what a snitch. What an absolute snitch. Aiden's ever so smack.
I'd love to have seen a backstory of these two, of what happened after when his mate grassed him up, because I'd love to have seen that. But the shark does go in the pond. And oh my God, we got Michael Brody in there, placed in there by his dad. And thankfully, a very helpful woman who's doing some painting shouts out,
Shark! The shark! The guy in the pond! Shark!
Now what?
Michael's in the pond.
And the poor geezer who's giving everyone like a rowing lesson, he gets it. And you just knew, didn't you? He was just like an extra. He would may as well have shark food written on his back. And he gets his leg bitten off. And it's very realistic, I think. Would the leg sink or would it float? I always wonder that.
I would say, I'd say float.
Float, Kelly? You're a floater or you're a sinker? I've heard you're a floater.
Depends on the day.
Depends how much fiber you eat.
Exactly. I would think that it would sink.
Cool, we've got two different opinions. Why is that? Why would it sink?
Because if it's been severed off the body, where's the buoyancy in the body to keep it afloat within the limb?
I think the only way we can solve this is get a sausage and throw it into some water and see if it floats. That's about as close as you're going to get, really, isn't it? I think.
Well, you could Google it. That might also work.
I like the sausage idea.
Or we could test it and chop off someone's leg.
Are you volunteering?
Yeah. No, you'd take a while to get through my legs. They're so chunky.
Now you've been down the gym. Or is it still swollen? How is it? An update? On the last pod you were on, you dropped a weight on your foot. Is there an update from that at all?
The toe is still black and a bit bruised. It's going to make a full recovery, though. Just going to take some time.
Amazing. You'd not believe the amount of emails we got of concern from our female listeners about your toe. I mean, I was inundated. I took a day off reading them all. It was just unbelievable. Thanks, everyone who asked about Steve's toe.
So no one.
You can believe no one? I'm going to say lots.
It's because you're talking bollocks.
Sorry, Steve.
I've accepted the truth.
Fair enough. And someone else who's accepted the truth, and what an amazing link that was, is Vaughan when he's in the hospital. You've got Michael, who didn't get eaten by the shark. Why didn't he get eaten? Was it because he was treading water? Was it because he was just still? We will never know. It's part of the story. But for once, Vaughan says, this is my fault. I'm sorry. I'm truly sorry. And at last, you've been waiting for this to actually happen. And 1 minute, 1 hour, 4 minutes, 51 seconds, Roy Schneider loses his shit with Vaughan.
You're going to sign this voucher so I can hire a contractor.
I don't know if I can do that without...
I'm going to hire Quint to kill the shark.
August.
What?
August.
What are you talking about? Larry, the summer is over. You're the mayor of Shark City. These people think you want the beaches open.
I was acting in the town's best interest.
That's right, you were acting in the town's best interest, and that's why you're going to do the right thing. That's why you're going to sign this, and we're going to pay that guy what he wants.
God, he should have done this so long ago, shouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, he's clearly got it in him. Maybe there's a reason why he wants to remain calm, but this was a long time coming.
Yeah, definitely, and it's great, and it leads us to the introduction of Quint. He finally gets what he wants. He is hired to capture this shark. Obviously, he's not going to do it alone because that would be too simple. He's going to get Brody with him. He's going to get Hooper with him. And what a duo. It's like the Three Amigos. It's absolutely brilliant. And I just love his little saying. He goes, he used to swim in with bow-legged women. And he gives him that drink. And Brody just sniffs it and then takes a swig and spits it out. And then he advises Hooper not to drink it, doesn't he? It's so funny.
I think this dynamic that they've got going on, it does work. But I still at this point think Hooper is a lot less of a penis than what he is towards the end of the film. So I prefer it at this point.
But it's like a dick measuring competition. I know it's a weird link to go to you, Kelly, with this. But it is because as soon as Hooper walks in there, first thing Quint does is throw him a rope and says, tie Sheepshank. And so they're just battling it out of knowledge, aren't they? Then he grabs his hands and kind of measures like the roughness of his hands, of if he's an office boy, if he's a hard worker. And they're kind of juking it out, aren't they?
They are. And the stupid thing is, if they actually work together, they'd probably do quite well because they both, like I said, I think they've both got similar knowledge. They've just gained it in different ways and they both think they're better than each other. They just need to get on with it, get over themselves and deal with what they've got to deal with. Because it's just ridiculous. They're both just being pricks.
Yeah, they are. And again, when they're loading the boat up, putting the stuff on the orca, and he's got to put, and he mocks him about the shark cage. And again, you've got the different ways of doing it, as we've all spoken about earlier. But and I kind of question the fact that he didn't know what a shark cage was. That surely Quint must know. He's a fisherman for many a years. And he talks about Indianapolis. He's not an idiot. He's not lived in a cave all his life. But surely he would have known about the kind of shark cage, wouldn't he?
Well, you'd have thought so, because you'd think that that would be the sort of thing you'd use to catch fish on a smaller scale, but maybe not, because he's never actually gone to try and catch a shark. Who knows?
Yeah, but I love the little songs he sings, that Quint sings.
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so nevermore shall we see you again.
And he just does it really to mug everyone off. And even when Ellen Brody turns up, obviously it's so sexist and you probably couldn't get away with it these days.
Here lies the body of Mary Lee, died at the age of 103. For 15 years she kept her virginity. Not a bad record for this vicinity.
And when he said that, originally, they were worried about his quoting from a book, but he says he took it from a gravestone from Ireland, and he just always remembered the little lyric from there, which was a very weird gravestone, I think. So they're soon on the orca, and things do get exciting. When they get their first sniff, you got Quint there with his fishing rod, and that's not a euphemism. And I love the tension in this. He's just sitting there and the rod's out the back and they're obviously sea fishing and suddenly it starts to get that click. And the way he looks down and slowly, as if he's going to spook the shark or whatever else is on the other end of the line, the way he slowly clips himself in, clips the rod in, and the way it's played out is just really exciting. And you don't see the shark and you don't know whether he's actually caught the shark or not. And the shark's actually biting, or is it a barracuda or a marlin or swordfish or what it is? I mean, do you guys think this is the great white? Do you think he's got jaws at this very second?
I suppose no. By this point, you'll hope it. Oh, brilliant. Just no. Well, up until this point, we've not been introduced to Bruce. So you are waiting, you are hoping. But yeah, I was like, no, there's been too many times when you thought it's coming, so I don't believe it anymore.
No, and it's really clever that, and they just by pure luck, and I do love the way things work out, that because obviously it's a mechanical shark in water, every day they had to service it, every day they had to paint it, wait for the paint to dry, and the amount of problems with salt and mechanical doesn't go together. The only reason why they didn't introduce it earlier was because it broke down so much. So they just used a lot of footage they weren't going to use and they put it into the film. And it's just by pure luck that, and it's something that spawned on from other films where you don't introduce a killer, it's all psychological. And it's just done by pure luck. And obviously, people say it's the genius of Spielberg, which he is. But I just love the way things do work out. And that they never, if it was ruined it, if they'd have had the shark within the first 10 minutes of this, wouldn't it? You can't imagine that ever happening now, can you?
No, you do need the suspense, to be fair. But by this point, I wanted a fucking shark.
Really? Did you think about that, Kelly? That obviously you'd never seen this and that you don't see the shark until quite way into the film. Were you waiting to see the shark? Did you not think about that at all?
No. Well, yes and no. I did because I liked the way that it did, I guess, unintentionally build in the suspense. I think, like you said, it sets it up for a lot of other sort of horror films where you don't see the true identity of whatever the killer is until later on in the film. I think it does it really well. So I think if you'd have seen it earlier on, it would have ruined it and the film wouldn't have been the film that it is today at all. So I think because I knew that it kind of did that, I wasn't expecting it, but I think it did it really well in terms of you sort of thinking, is it going to happen now? Is it going to happen now? And I think it did work really well and you kind of wanted it to happen, but when it didn't, you weren't disappointed.
Yeah, I think it works really, really well. And you do get the foreshadow in this when the oxygen canisters do fall out and they talk about this explosive, if these kind of bang together, that they will blow up. And obviously Mythbusters did it. And in real life, if you shot an oxygen tank, it wouldn't blow up. Yeah, they kind of do drop the foreshadow. And when I was younger, once I'd seen this film a few times, it was a case of I always used to fast forward it to an hour and 20 minutes. Because this is when, for me, the action happens. That this is when the film really gets going. This is like, to be honest, probably by time-wise, it's like the final, was broken into thirds, the final actual chapter of when it's man versus shark, when they're on the boat. And again, the lines just keep coming in this.
Slow ahead. I can go slow ahead. Come on down and chump some of this shit.
Then all of a sudden, you see George, you see Bruce come up from the sea. And it's the first time we've seen him. Massive teeth, absolutely huge. It's a monster. And when he comes back and he makes that iconic line, and the film gets going, doesn't it? It's got pace now. It's got stakes, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, everyone knows this line, regardless of whether you... Actually, Kel, did you know this line before you heard it?
Nope. I did not at all.
So if anybody said to you, you need a bigger boat, you had no idea?
I had no idea what film it referenced, no. And no one's ever said that to me. So even when me and Stu were talking about the film, he never said anything like that. So I never knew. No, not until afterwards.
There you go. This is why we do the podcast. This is why we are doing films, iconic cult films, that you kind of do reference. And there's just so much that you kind of just miss out on, like little jokes and nuggets and kind of the way films are made, which led to other films and that are still used and taught in film schools. But it's just really good. And there's so many films that we can go through and you can watch and we can review again, which I'm more than happy to do. But this shark is massive. And it's just, and when you think it's mechanical and it's in the sea, they're actually on a boat. And they didn't use a swimming pool. They didn't want to do it. They wanted to actually go out in the environment. And nowadays, it will just be green screen. Like when you see like the Meg and shit like that, that all of these films spawned after this, that this film done it the real way. And with the budget it had and the money it made, it's incredible it ever got made at all, Steve, isn't it, really?
Yeah, but thank God it did. I mean, actually, no. If it hadn't been made, I'd be able to go in the water a lot better.
But imagine the fun in that, though, what we've got now. You know, we had Halloween where we're frightened. We've got the slasher that made us completely terrified that if you look out the window, you're going to have someone in a mask staring up at you. Or you had these slasher films or Amityville and Poltergeist. All of these films that I had in the 80s that terrified me, that I believe were real, that kind of psychologically damaged me. Kids are missing out so much these days that they're so desensitized to these kind of horror films and nightmares. And I just fucking love this film so much. But the idea, and they in the book, they do harpoon the shark, and they say the shark dies. But what Quint wants to do is put floats on the shark and kind of drag the shark into shallower waters and then kill it that way, which does make sense. And it's probably a way he's used many a times. And as the film goes on, I think you get some really iconic scenes of three barrels. But when they do harpoon the shark and the pressure's on Hooper to tie these floats all together, he doesn't wait for him. He gives no fucks. And it really reminded me, and obviously I do watch too many films, but you know, Steve, in Die Hard, where one of the brothers is cutting the telephone wires and the other one's trying to fix the cables. Do you remember that? And it's just like that scene. One of them wants to do something. He doesn't give a fuck about the time restraints on it. And Hooper's trying to tie the knot. Chances are he could get his hand wrapped in it and end up in the sea as well. But it's just brilliant with Quint on the kind of the front of the boat with that gun. It's just so good. And he does get the first float in him, doesn't he?
You look at their relationship and it feels so genuine, so you can tell that they just didn't get on with one another.
No, it's you can understand why, but the bonding scene for me, one of these scenes is again, it's just brilliant. You believe that you're actually sitting here, these guys, when it's in the evening and they're showing off their scars, they're all pissed and they're just ad-libbing loads of this. It's brilliant scene, isn't it?
Yeah, what they're just banging like limbs on a table and saying, "Look at this, look at this, look at this."
Yeah, it's just a massive dick measuring contest, isn't it?
And then Chief Brody wants to get his little scar out, but realizes his penis cannot be measured, and puts it away very quickly. And I suppose you look at that and think, "Is this going to explain why he's scared of water?" But it's nothing, isn't it? It's just nothing.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Richard Dreyfuss's chest is so hairy when he pulls down the scar on his chest that Brody just says to him, "You're wearing a jumper?" Because it looks like he's got a big fucking jumper on. It's his hairy chest. I'm pleased to say I am not that hairy. I mean, are you, Steve?
No, I am pleasantly smooth, I'd say.
Kelly?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Yeah, I'm just as hairy. I was littered rather than, born. I was.
That's
You're
that's
welcome.
honestly really funny for you, Kel, to be fair. That was
I think there's a
actually
backhanded compliment there.
really fucking good. That deserves way more credit.
Coming out like that, I think it's brilliant. Fair play to you, mate. That's really good. But they are having a really good drink, and that's when you get the iconic. And I say that word iconic because when he talks about the Indianapolis of when they died and those sailors were eaten alive and left, and that the mission they were on, it was the bomb to Hiroshima, that it was so top secret that no one knew where they were and they couldn't be rescued.
Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. Tiger, 13-footer. You know that when you're in the water, Chief, you tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. Well, we didn't know, which our bomb mission had been so secret. No distress signal had been sent. They didn't even list as overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. It's kind of like old squares in a battle, like you see in a calendar, like the Battle of Waterloo. And the idea was, shark comes the nearest man, that man, he start pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark would go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away.
It kind of gives you goosebumps when you listen to Robert Shaw tell this story, Kelly, don't you? I was just there. Every time I listen to this, I freeze what I'm doing and I listen to it. It was really good. What was your thoughts? First time listening to this?
If I'm honest, it didn't have that effect on me at all.
Really? Why? Tell me.
I don't know. I just didn't find that I was that invested in it, I guess. Maybe because I didn't like the character. I don't know. It was just another tale for him to tell. I don't know.
Do you
I
know
didn't
about the
feel
Indianapolis?
it, no, but I didn't know it having him say it or tell it the way he did, it didn't really do anything for me.
I'm really, really surprised. And I think if you watched it again and again, and if you knew that that story told was actually true, that,
yeah,
that it might mean more to you. I'd love to think it did. And I think it's just, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's a shame that it didn't, that I want you to share in the excitement that I've got. Steve, rescue me. Tell me.
What do you want me to tell you?
That you enjoyed it. That it meant something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, but I really like the story of the ship anyway. I think it's absolutely fascinating. Like 3.5 days, just hundreds of sailors just bobbing up and down in the sea. So, yeah, the way he tells it, I think it's really good.
Brilliant. You've just made me a very, very happy man. If you would have said no as well, I would have been disappointed and I would have been shocked. I don't know which more of, but possibly 50-50. But, yeah, it's just, he tells it in such a way where that you believe that he's actually been through it himself in real life. And you can imagine someone doing that. But, and then it gets more lighthearted when they sing and Show Me the Way to Go Home. They're having brilliant fun. And as the book states, that Jaws does ram the orca. And this is where it all goes Pete Tong. I couldn't imagine anything worse, being on a boat and it starts to take in water. That's got to be fucking terrifying, isn't it?
This is why you don't do boats. This is why you don't do open water. This is why you don't go out at night. Like, I have never, whilst stood on dry land, started taking on water. Apart from hydration, obviously. I haven't just stood there and started flooding. So, I've not been rammed by a shark. These are all avoidable things.
You wouldn't be rammed by a shark. This is where it loses it for me. You would not be rammed by a shark.
Why not? Not
like this. Sharks will not ram anything. It hurts the nose. The way to get away from a shark if it attacks you is punch it on the nose because it fucking hurts them.
That's how nonsense, you save your life. So if you were getting attacked by a shark, if you were just swimming and suddenly a shark, bang, like a tiger shark.
It's not nonsense.
But who would think on earth?
I'm not saying
the puncher.
I'm not,
it's like
saying you would
when
have
you get
the
attacked by a fucking alligator. If you gouge their eyes out, like they'll back off. Or a bear. If you lay down when a grizzly bear is running up to you, who the fuck does this? Everyone just shits their pants.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure if you would be fighting it. So if you just have a tiny little bit of like presence of mind in that frenzied, like, I don't know, 30 seconds of chance of live or die, if you punch it on the nose, you've got more of a chance of just like poking at its eyes. So a shark would not ram a boat. That would not happen. It would be too painful for it. It would potentially come at it when they're in the cage and like swim up against it and chew at it, but it wouldn't ram at a boat, and that loses it for me. But I guess you might not have known this so much when the film came out.
Point earlier, we didn't have the internet, we weren't educated enough. But
I know, but
didn't know these things, did they? So you can get away with it. And also, you're going to the Caribbean soon. If you're going to say to your husband, I'm just going to go for a swim in the sea, and if he turned around and said, okay, no worries, have fun. If a great white attacks you, just punch it on the nose, you'll be all right. You turn around and go, fuck off, don't be such a dick. You wouldn't take that advice on board. Yeah, go, okay, I remember that. And if
no,
I come
I'd
out
like
the scene,
I
as a bear
already
there,
know that.
See, now that's some bullshit.
I just wouldn't do it.
It fucking would, trust me. If it meant I live or die, if I live or die and it makes a difference between keeping a limb or losing a limb, I'm going to try anything. Fucking hell yeah. Sorry, I like my legs. Thanks very much.
Well, I'm glad you do. But I just think it just would not happen. I think your natural reaction is just, I mean, it'll probably swim away because it doesn't like excrement, because that would be the natural thing to happen, Steve, wouldn't it?
I mean, I wouldn't be in the sea in this problem in the first place, so I can't comment. I could chuck some feces at it from the pier, but that's probably as good as it gets.
That would just be rank, but someone's getting attacked down below, say in Brighton, that you're on the pier and there's an innocent person just getting attacked by a shark and you're there just picking up your own shit and throwing it off the pier. I would love to see that.
Just smear it over their nose. That's the sensitive part of the shark.
People be like, what are you trying to do? I'm just trying to help. Like, what? You're mental. I think you'd end up in
I can it. Actually see you doing it.
Yeah. I'm actually banned from 13 piers around the England.
Just being kind of pulled away in handcuffs. I was only trying to help. There was just shit everywhere.
Well, I mean, how would you help then, Stu? What would you do?
I just say I wouldn't see anything and just carry on.
You'd have your wang out, pissing off the side of the pier, trying, you know, there you go. That's some of that. Sharky
I'd be trying
boy.
To work out. No, I'd do what everyone else does, not help and get my phone out and video it.
Yeah,
that's what would happen in real life, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong. Put it on TikTok or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what people would do. But we do get the float that does come up. And again, as they're trying to get the float in, the shark comes up. And again, we see the shark's teeth. And it's just done brilliantly. I know it's not real. And I know, Kelly, you're going to say this just wouldn't happen. But to think it's the mechanical shark. And back in 1975, this was just... had never been done before. It was groundbreaking. And it's just so exciting. And so, to be fair, Brody does call for help. But Quint fucks their whole journey up, doesn't he? When he comes in with a baseball bat and smashes it up. And again, Brody loses his shit with him, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, what's the point, though? Why do it?
But why smash it up? I think by this time, Quint knows deep down that he's dealing with something he's never dealt with before, and he's out of his depth. And I think he's taking it on a personal mission that it's, forget Hooper, forget Brody, that it's him versus the shark. It's personal pride. That's what I think. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I think he's realised that this is potentially the catch of his life. And if they call him for help, he might not be the one to take the glory. So he's kind of lost it a little bit and just goes mental and just, I don't know, like sees red. He can't think of anything else other than I want to get it. I want to be the person to claim this victory.
Yeah, because he puts one float in him. He puts another float in him. And the shark, it just is so strong. We've already seen how big the shark is. And they're saying like 23 foot, 25. And that the shark can just go underwater regardless of these buoyancies on there. And I do like the bit when they tie the buoyancies and the shark starts pulling them and Hooper gets stuck between these lines. I mean, that must really hurt, mustn't it?
Yeah, but he's not under there for long, is he? I think he just needs to grow up.
Fuck, that would hurt so much. And it would terrify you that the shark is so big that it starts pulling the boat around. And that would, oh God, it would just freak me out. I mean, like, yeah, arachnophobia film, I hate spiders. I hate anything to do when you're in the sea, in the middle of nowhere, you look all around you, 360, and there's no land. And you know for a fact, if you end up in the sea, you're dead. And what do you think, Kelly? And I'd like to get your point of view. When the floats are on the boat and the shark is swimming towards the boat, chewing the lines up, for me, it looks fantastic. Those massive teeth. It's so scary. And it's so fucking fierce. Bearing in mind, it's the first time you've seen it and you've seen other films with special effects. Was this just nothing? Did you laugh at this and think, what a load of shit?
No, I didn't. I thought it was really good, given when it was done and how, for the time, how realistic it does look. And it does, it is fucking scary. If you take it on face value for what it is fucking scary. I think it was really good. And again, it builds in, it's another way that it builds in suspense to the to what's going to happen and how is it going to end. I thought it was really good.
I'm really pleased you say that because it is just three men on a boat. That's all it is, these three guys. And this shark, Steve, is pulling this boat backwards. It's so powerful and they're just helpless. It's like the ocean, the waves. You are just powerless, aren't you?
Yeah. And to go back to three men on a boat, I'm surprised by this point we didn't have a sex scene.
Surprised or disappointed?
Oh my god!
Between yeah, who would it be between?
All of them.
Oh, okay.
It's only been away on the sea a couple of days.
Can you not last a couple of days?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you asking me or telling me?
I don't know, but anyway, yeah, the shark's really scary.
I think you want to tell us about a scenario where you may have been out on a pedalo and you were out there too long, possibly.
Yeah, this is the real reason as to why I don't go on a sea anymore. There's this thing with a pedalo, a swan pedalo, and it was crazy. And there might have been some like alcohol and the police, but we don't talk about it.
And honestly, whatever you say on the podcast stays on the podcast. You know, yeah,
that. Private.
This literally doesn't get broadcasted anywhere. No one's ever going to hear about the things I did to that pedalo.
And you say that, and you found a really interesting fact about our podcast, our lovely little podcast on another podcasting platform, didn't you, Kel?
I did. I don't know which one it was. I think you said it was Germany, maybe. It is in the top 5%, I think, of listened to podcasts in over 3 million.
That is the most random thing in the world.
It's a global ranking. This podcast is one of the top 5% most popular shows out of 3,315,590 podcasts.
I was so proud at that moment. And that's thanks to everyone who's listening right now to the utter nonsense that we speak.
And so now there's a mass amount of Germans curious to what I've done to a pedlo.
But that's global. That's everyone around the world knows.
Oh, that's my globally.
God. Oh, I'm so getting banned from pedlos.
You won't be able to hire one out at all, mate. You really won't.
Oh, there's going to be pictures of me, like, you know, don't allow this guy on the pedlo.
We can definitely make that happen.
Fuck.
But yeah, so it's crazy. But back to this film. They're being chased, weirdly, because they've cut the lines where the shark was chewing from. He's got three buoyancy aids on him now. And it's strange, and it's a weird decision, that the shark is now chasing the orca. And if you looked at it and kind of suspended all disbelief that why would the shark now chase the boat? It's become personal, which it obviously wouldn't do, would it?
Well, maybe it comes down to all the thrashing that's coming from that boat as well. He's the boat and that shark have literally been best pals for however long they've been out. So the shark's not eating anything. So he's getting a bit aggy, he's getting a bit hungry, you know, he's just doing what he does as a predator.
He does, and the boat is sinking. The boat does start to sink, and I got to admit, when Quint comes out, he doesn't take a life jacket for himself. Obviously, he's been in situations like this with one of the stories he spoke at the start with the boat to Hiroshima, that I wouldn't take a life jacket. What is the point of taking a life jacket? You've got this shark out there, the boat is sinking, and you are fucked, basically. There's not a lot that can get you out of this. And it's only this kind of twist of fate where he turns around to Hooper and finally talking about what does this stuff do that you brought on the boat with regards to the cage and the kind of all of the like the poison that he can do and he can inject the shark with it. And this is kind of last chance saloon, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, time is ticking now, so they've got to try anything.
And again, this is really, really good. Just visually, it's fantastic. And you've got the oxygen tanks, which I spoke about before, which will come into play later on. But when Hooper, madman, he's got no choice, but a madman, going to get into a cage. He's seeing how big the shark is. That his line, when he says he doesn't have any spit for his goggles, that just highlights how terrified he is. And it's such a good line, isn't it? Just to show that even me, I kind of spend half my life in the water, that I am fucking terrified. It plays out so well.
What does spit do anyway? In terms of goggles,
I don't know whether it stops them from steaming up.
It stops them steaming up.
Okay.
So, but I don't know why he couldn't have just used water. Why he had to use spit?
Because it doesn't work the same.
What do you spit in your goggles?
Kelly's our spit expert.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah, if I go diving or snorkeling, yeah, I will clean and my mask with spit to start with, yes.
Do you get it really phlegmy as well?
Mm. Yeah, you hock one up, a real good one, yeah.
Oh, back of the throat business.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to do it, you got to do it right.
Yeah.
And when they did this, they had a small shark cage and they had a smaller person in it to give more definition to the shark of how big it is. That's when they filmed it from some of the angles, which is great. But again, it comes into the way that it's been done, the cinematography of just the look on Hooper's face when he sees a shark swimming towards him. He's under the water with a shark jaws coming towards him. And then you've got above the sea, the floats, So they know what's going on. And it just, it's amazing. For love nor money, I would not get in this cage whatsoever. Would you guys?
Love, no. Money, we can always discuss.
You've got to be
You're not
to
that afraid then, are you really?
Yeah, but I mean, the things I'd do for money, Kel, you know, it's...
That's another podcast. We can talk about that later.
Yeah, that comes back to spitting again.
No, that's my job.
We've all got our own expertise.
Exactly.
Well, this is true.
But the shark attacks, and Hooper again. He dropped the tooth earlier. Now he drops his spear, so he can't do anything, and he's helpless. Kelly, when you watched this, did you think he was a goner?
Oh yeah, I thought he was got. Especially when he dropped his spear, dart, poison thing. I thought he's a fucking. But yeah, I thought that's it. You're the next dinner, because the whole bars and everything that separates and all that kind of jazz. I thought, yeah, he doesn't stand a chance.
No, and when they were pulling it up and you see the shot of the shark actually in the top of the cage, that is a real shark that did get stuck at the top of the cage when they were trying to pull it up. That isn't actually Jaws. So, and you see the size of that shark. It's enormous, isn't it?
All sharks are enormous. They're fucking massive.
They're not.
Oh my God. Why have you got to argue? Just accept that sharks are big, bad, scary bitches.
Because they're not. They're actually quite cute, some of them.
Yeah, they're not all really, really bad. But it's very, very good. And this shark, the one that's kind of caught at the top of the cage, which does escape, is absolutely enormous. And you do believe that Hooper died. Whether he should have died or not, that's kind of comes down to personal choice. I don't think he should have done, because they believe he is. The shark cage is pulled up and it's ripped to pieces. And then Jaws, good old Bruce, jumps on the back of the orca. And what did you think on first viewing, Kelly, was going to happen on this part? Tell me.
I don't really know. I didn't expect the Quint. I didn't expect him to go. And I also, when you saw that that was going to happen, I didn't expect it to be that brutal. But I kind of figured he would probably actually survive, and it'd be Brody that goes, because that would make the story more sad and more emotional, because he was the one that wanted to fight it at the beginning and say close the beach, blah blah blah. So it would have been more traumatic for him to be the one that goes.
Yeah, and it, as you said, it's a really savage death, Quint, isn't it? It's awful.
I thought it was actually very good, and it's. Like the one before, like with the kid, it shows you a lot of graphic detail, which you probably wouldn't get now. So I quite enjoyed it. It was quite gruesome.
Yeah, and Steve, the look on Brody's face, Quint's obviously been taken under the water, and he goes into the main kind of, like, I don't know what you call it, the main housing of the boat. And Jaws comes through the window, and the look of terror on his face is so realistic, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think Chief Brody's excels on, considering he's chief of police in that place, wherever they are, he always seems to be scared.
I'd be fucking shitting myself if I was there. Jesus Christ, I can't blame him for having a scared look on his face.
I get that, but he always looks scared. So he looks extra scared now.
I don't know the difference of faces, but he does look pretty terrified. I think he's got every right to be. And it's just brilliant. You've got the shark down below. He hates water. As far as he knows, it's just him versus the shark. And he conveniently puts the oxygen tank in the shark's mouth, which was foreshadowed before. And you do get, just before you see him climb up the mast, you get that scene of they just show bubbles coming up from the surface. And was that Hooper? Was that our reference to the audience that Hooper's still alive? Or was that meant to be the shark? Did you pick up on that?
No, I don't think I've thought anything of it, to be fair.
I thought it was to show that Hooper had just hidden and done quite well.
It's a tiny reference that you could easily miss, isn't it?
I mean, I got it, so it can't be that bad.
You're trying to take the piss out of Steve now, because Steve didn't get
no,
it.
No, well...
It feels that way.
It does, doesn't
that
it?
just that's that kind of happens as a side piece, but yeah, I guess.
Fair enough. I'm not going to get involved in that. But he is at the mast, and Jaws, again, all of these scenes for me personally are so iconic. When he's got that spear and he's just sticking it in his nose, and you've got the blood coming out, you know that the size of that shark, that's not going to have any effect. But Jaws does go away, and when he kind of comes up again, and he's swimming, and he's swimming right towards him, and you've got Chief Brody shooting his rifle at Jaws, trying to get that tank. And again, just like you're going to need a bigger boat. And he says, smile, you son of a... And he shoots that oxygen tank, and the thing blows up.
All right, come on. Show me the tank. Show me the tank.
Blow up!
Wow. Every time I see this, I just fucking love it. I cheer. It's like when Captain America picks up Thor's hammer. It's that kind of moment, Steve. It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good line, but equally it annoys me because I don't think anyone would ever believe that story.
What's that?
Well, that he's just shot an oxygen tank in a shark's mouth and it's blown up. Could you imagine trying to tell that to the mayor? He's not going to believe you. There's no evidence now.
No, you wouldn't believe it if you were in a pub. Like, if someone said, yeah, shot a oxygen tank in a shark's mouth. Like, yeah, that's a bollock story, isn't it?
Yeah, and as I did it, I said, smile, you son of a... And then I shot it. And it was great.
Especially if he's a bullshitter anyway. No one's ever going to believe him that you come up with that line. But I just thought it was great. Did you expect the end the way it did end, Kelly? Did you?
I guess... Not really the way it ended, no. I figured there might be something where they're on land again, but I guess it was sailing off into the sunset with a twist.
With a twist. I love that. It sounds like a drink.
Can I have a sailing off into the sunset with a twist, please?
Exactly, and an umbrella. But Hooper comes up. You do think that Hooper is another fish, another predator, but he comes up, and it's just a lovely moment because Schneider is just out of it. Brody's done. He's killed the shark. He thinks that's it. And the way it just ends quickly, they both laugh and they do kind of have a nod to Quint. Is he still alive? And I don't really think there's many fucks given by Hooper, to be honest, do you?
Nah.
Because as soon as he says, is he alive or dead? Well, is it Monday or Tuesday? I don't know what day it is. Yeah, and he soon gets over it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But strangely enough, on the last day, Steven Spielberg thought that something was going to happen to him, that he was going to get pranked. So he didn't go on the last day of filming. And ever since then, through every film he's ever made, on the last day of filming, he's never on set. And it's like a tradition that he's actually kind of continued, which is a very weird one, isn't it?
That's kind of cute.
Is it?
Yeah, it's cute.
Oh, bless you. I love your little cutes. So that is 1975 Jaws. Kelly, tell me, was it... You've heard the hype. I've spoken about it before. What did you think of this film?
I thought it was actually all right. I was aware that it was obviously released a long time before I was even thought about. So I was aware it wasn't going to be amazing. But for the time, it was really good. It had a good story to it. I liked the way the suspense was like built into it. And now I understand the lines and things that come from it that you do when you do weird movie quotes. But no, I would say it's a good film. I'd say it's something that you have to watch, but don't watch it when you're too young because you'll end up like Steve.
I've turned out perfectly all right, thanks.
Exactly.
Have you? Steven, that's a matter of opinion.
He hasn't said anything weird whatsoever during this podcast. I don't know what you're on about. What would you give it out of five?
I would probably say I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. That's kind of... I thought you might go 2.5, to be honest, because you usually do go 2. It takes quite a lot to impress you, to be honest, when it comes to the films that we've been doing. And would you recommend this to anyone, or not really? It's not made that much of an impact on you.
No, I would recommend it. Yeah, definitely. It's something that I think you should watch. I think it's something that you should experience just to see how it was back then and how much effort people put into making films then, because it's a lot easier now to do these things, like you say, with green screen and stuff like that, where these people are actually out there making it actually in the sea for the realism. It shows how proper films really were made.
And 3 years later, 1978, Jaws 2 actually came out. Is that something, if that was on television on an evening, that you'd think, I've just done Jaws, I'm quite interested to see what happens in Jaws 2. Would you watch Jaws 2?
No.
Nope. Okay, that's fair enough.
No, it wasn't that good. It wasn't something where I think, yeah, let's waste another hour and a half of my time.
Oh, that's a shame. I just think that's it. I'm going to put that down to a generational thing and the fact that you're a twat. Steve, you go for it, mate.
5 out of 5, cult classic. It's aged like a fine wine. It's great.
Yeah, that's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. And I love you for that. I really, really do. It's how many times would you say you watched this film?
Honestly, close to 50. I've watched it so many. Like, it's one of those films that if you're in bed one night, you've got a TV on, or you're on a sofa, and you switch past like ITV2 or something, it's on.
Yeah,
and then you just think, oh, I'll just watch a bit of it, and then you just watch the full 2 hours. So yeah,
it's a superb film. Yeah, I echo what you say, mate. I love this film. I've watched this film God knows how many times. It's just brilliant. I love watching the making of this. I love listening to like the interviews, just everything about how this film came to be the summer blockbuster, the iconic film, the queues outside the cinema back in 1975. Of just how many people went to see this and how it affected and has changed people's lives, that I just think this film has just changed the way we watch films and the way films are made. And it should be credited for the genius that it is for Steven Spielberg. A lot of it is pure luck, but I just think it's brilliant. And the quotes, this film, again, is so quotable. Still, after all these years, that 50 years coming on, that it's just so good. And when it comes to 50, I'd go and watch it at the cinema again, because it's just an amazing, amazing film. Number 2 isn't as good, but once they do leave the island and go out on the boats, number 2, it is really good. I give this film 5. It's just brilliant. What do you guys think when Mayor Vaughan came up for re-election? That, do you think he got re-elected or not?
Yeah, because I imagine he would make out like everything was his idea and really use it to his advantage. So I think he would get re-elected.
Yeah. Kelly, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think he'd spin it and be a proper politician and make it sound like he saved the day and it was all him and he needs to be praised for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I kind of thought about that. I always love thinking after the film's like shut down and life goes on in wherever land it is, that what would happen. And yeah, I'd think that he'd say if the shark was going to, like, we shut the beach down, that it would attack a week later. So what are we going to lose? And I was the one who hired Quint. I was the one who got Brody out there and Hooper. And he would put a spin on it. And the people were ignorant enough and naive enough to vote for him again. And it's, yeah, I just would love to see his election campaign of how he would have spun that, because it would have been brilliant. But thanks, everyone. I've loved talking about this film again. We will do another kind of iconic classic film that obviously Kelly hasn't seen, and we'll review it on the pod in another couple of weeks or a month's time when we've got nothing on the queue. But next week, we've got a film which I wanted to do a few weeks ago that I'm just really, really excited about. And it's a film from the 80s. Has been remade ridiculously starring Jake Gyllenhaal. We're not actually doing that, but we are doing 1989 Roadhouse starring Patrick Swayze. It's amazing film for various reasons, but I can't wait to hear everyone's reaction. Guys, have you seen Roadhouse?
I actually haven't seen Roadhouse.
Oh my God, I won't even bother asking you, Kelly. It's got Sam Elliott. It's got Kelly Lynch from our Cocktail podcast, who's married to Coughlin, and Patrick Swayze. It's just It's brilliant for some of the wrong reasons and some of the right reasons. It's a real classic film. So next week, Patrick Swayze, and I think this is the first time we've ever reviewed a film since 2014 involving Patrick Swayze. That's crazy. How has that happened? But that's on next week.
Have you done Dirty Dancing before?
No, we've never done Dirty Dancing.
Crazy.
Well, there we go. That could be on the queue. But yeah, so
Oh.
next week we are doing Roadhouse. There's so much happening at the moment, so many good films that we're going to review and on the back catalogue. And as you've heard, we're on all podcasting platforms all around the world. So wherever you are, you can listen to the Film Reel cast. We're on YouTube as well. And yeah, thanks for your support. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week. All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience. And any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.